do things that I used to do in 8 hours, it takes me now 1 hour, 2 hours. That's a huge efficiency gain. If you have 5 clients and you save 5 hours per every client, that's a lot of savings per month.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your company's spend without buying an ERP, but we are not here to talk about that today. Instead, I've got Anna Tiomina from Blend to Balance. I hope I got the pronunciation right, Anna. Great. And Anna is someone who started off in finance and still has that finance expertise, but has found her world transformed by the world of AI. AI, as we know, is transforming everything around us. And Anna has developed a particular passion for it, which has led her on to a new career around helping finance teams through training to implement some of the latest opportunities for efficiency. And we're going to talk about all about that today. We're going to talk about how your finance team could be revolutionized by AI, if you know how to do it. So Anna, you're very welcome to the show. Maybe you can kick us off by telling us something about you that your colleagues probably don't know.
Okay, first of all, thanks for having me here. And there is one thing that I kind of mention from time to time, but most of my colleagues don't know, and I think they're lucky not to know. I like to do karaoke. Sometimes I invite my teams to join me. In the last couple of years, it's been mostly remote work, so I don't have this privilege of meeting with people who I work with. But if we ever get into the same city, I think they will not avoid hearing me.
Very good. Like, I often feel like karaoke is one of those things you can bond over. If it's a little bit like having something, they have something on you and you have something on them. If everyone's been to karaoke, you can sort of have one something on each other, one for good or ill, right?
That's true. I actually got a really great connection to a mentor a while ago while we were at a company event, and she took the team to karaoke and we bonded over that. And she helped me through my career since then. So, you know, you never know where you meet the right people.
Well, I'll let you into a secret, Anna. I do karaoke with my 10-year-old daughter, just me and her, right? Mm-hmm. And all of the songs I sing are like Cats in the Cradle. It's like all these songs about kids growing up and leaving their dad and, you know, and all the things that she, all the songs she sings, like from APT, is like, let me get out of here. I want to go to California. Like, you know, so she torments me. So, but hey, no one's ever going to know apart from her.
You still got some time with her, but I get it. My older one is a senior in high school this year, so I'm getting to that.
Yeah, I'm waiting. I'm terrified, to be honest. The teenagers are just terrifying me. I don't know. Anyway, let's not think about that right now. Let's think about something more positive. Finance. So you tell us a little bit of your background. Like, how did you get started in your career? And just bring us up to, you know, how you've become somewhat of a guru for finance teams when it comes to AI. Where did you get your start?
Yeah, I have a kind of, I would say, a little bit unusual career maybe in a way. But I've been in finance all my life. I started as a business analyst, then I moved to a controller role, and I was promoted to a CFO, and then I switched the company. I like switching industries, so I worked in steel industry, then I moved to pharma industry, to a big corporation, and after that, I spent 5 years in a software development company, so very various business models, and I've been in a huge corporation, like I mentioned, where they rotate people, where you have projects and like matrix type of structure. I spent 5 years in a much smaller company, a privately owned company where you have a lot of responsibility, you wear multiple hats. It had a lot of like startup spirit in it. And I wasn't actually thinking of switching the career. I was more or less happy where I was. But I was laid off a little bit like a year and a half ago from that software company, which happened to be the best thing that happened to me. Because when you are working full time, you have very little space for exploring new things. And I suddenly got a lot of time in my hands. So I thought, what is there that I need to look at? What do I need to maybe learn to get the new job? And that was the plan initially. And then I started to look into AI. It was not as popular as it is now back then, but it was already like ChatGPT was there. People were starting to use that. So I just started to use it and to talk about it with my network of finance people, CFOs. And it turned out that not a lot of people know how to use it. And there is a great demand in learning about how it works. So, you know, it happened kind of naturally that I started to talk about it. I started to do webinars with people, and then the training opportunities came. But I really like where I am now. So, you know, one door closes, another door opens.
So listening to you, it reminds me a little bit. It sounds like you're someone who just, you master something and then you move on. You need to change. You need to move from pillar to post.
You're right. I get bored easily. I like to have new projects all the time, and I like to do new things. And in this CFO job, you don't usually have a lot of that, honestly, right? We have a lot of mundane tasks. We do a lot of like scheduled activities. That's what it is. That's the job.
Now, as an entrepreneur, like I feel like a lot of times my job is being basically terrible at something until I'm barely competent, just barely competent enough to get someone else to do it. Mm-hmm. And then I go and be terrible at something else. You know, it's like continually, you know, until you. So, but the finance role, you're right. They sit into it and then they just, once they learn it, they nail it and keep being great at that, which, let's face it, there's a lot of benefit to doing that, staying, taking your wins. But all right. So let me ask you, you say you got, you know, you started networking with your peers. Was this on, did you start talking about AI on LinkedIn, or were you going down the pub, or where did you start to build your network?
LinkedIn is obviously one of the most important channels. At some point, I launched a newsletter. I still issue a newsletter every Tuesday. That keeps me motivated and organized. I have a deadline. I need to deliver something by this deadline. So it really pushes me to learn new things, to be able to talk about new things. But I also do a lot of offline networking here in Houston, but also there are a lot of various finance leaders organizations here in the United States. Sometimes I do conferences. It's important to go out and to talk to people, especially if you spend every day of your life working from home. I really miss the networking piece of my, you know, previous CFO work when I was in the office every day. You could solve a lot of issues over the coffee. It would take you 5 minutes instead of half an hour over the, you know, conference call. So I really miss this part of my life. So I try to go out and to meet people as much as I can. And there are a lot of opportunities for that here in Houston, but also, I guess, everywhere. Right. If you're not living in like a tiny village.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to this conversation because I love tech. I feel like tech, I worked in tech all my career, but say 4 or 5 years ago, I was kind of bored by the whole thing. It all looked very similar. Mm-hmm. Nothing was really new. We were all building the same type of apps. It was really getting kind of stale. Now nothing could be further from the truth. So maybe you could tell me, Where are the opportunities you're starting to see finance teams for using AI in practice? I guess you can play toy, you can play with something that you don't really use, or you know, there's a lot of that throwaway stuff. But how are you starting to see the first implementation of AI within finance teams today?
Well, like I don't think we're at the point when we start, and it's definitely not in the position of a toy anymore. A year ago or 6 months ago could be the case. Now a lot of people get real benefits from that. I use it a lot. I get efficiency for myself. Like, I do things that I used to do in like 8 hours. It takes me now 1 hour, 2 hours. That's a huge efficiency gain. If you have five clients and you save, you know, 5 hours per every client, that's a lot of savings per month, right? So this is like the first thing that you get from AI. You get like a very cheap, pretty efficient assistant if you know how to manage this assistant, like if you know where to control the output, if you know how to ask the right questions, if you know how to deal with data that you share with this assistant. Like if you get an intern from, I don't know, a university, right? The intern can be incredibly great at some things. You have to be very careful on what you delegate to this person. So this is one thing. I also see a more advanced AI projects implementation in some of the companies. I cannot say that all of them get it right, but also the ones that started to experiment earlier, they start to get the benefits and ROI earlier than the ones that are like waiting until the technology matures. And like, I'm watching that for a lot of time now. And I can tell you that you can never say that it has matured enough. At least it's not going to happen in the next, I don't know, 2, 3, 5 years, because the pace of change that we see in this area, it's something that we've never seen. And if you don't start now, it's going to be much harder to start in a year. So I try to encourage all my colleagues to at least experiment, to keep some space in their schedules, to mindfully learn new things, to mindfully try new ways of doing things. You do need to do it carefully. You don't try new things when you are under a tight deadline. When you need to deliver the result tomorrow, you do it the way that you know works, right? But it's also important to keep some time that you can dedicate to these experiments. And then the next time you do your task, you can do it differently and hopefully spend half as much time on this task as you used to do, right? So that's like a learning curve, a lot of experimentation. But don't wait until everybody tells you that this is a like mature technology. It's not going to happen anytime soon.
Okay, well, we'll talk about what to do with all this extra time we've created later on. And what I hear what you're saying is kind of like Google 20% time, I guess. They put calendar time in where you're going to experiment a little bit. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's the first step for people to take. Can you give me, like, let's get really tactical here. I mean, I guess for many years now, OCR or what do they call it? RPA, is it? Robotic. RPA. I'm forgetting the term now, but it has been a trend. Like, so no one's, you know, you're not copying and pasting, you're not rekeying stuff in. That's a common one that even within Procurement Express, of course, we've had that feature for many years. What are some other things that you see finance teams in particular being able to use AI to do faster that they weren't able to do before?
That's a very broad question. Like, you can do pretty much everything faster than you used to do before.
Right.
Some of the things are like times faster. Like, you can automate, I don't know, report preparation, right? So a lot of finance people do monthly, weekly, whatever reporting. You don't need to type all these comments yourself anymore. You don't need to spend time preparing the charts. AI can do everything for you here. A lot of things where you deal with document analysis, generation, stuff like that. So for example, in my role as a CFO, I had to sign off the contracts, right? The sales contracts. The only thing that I cared about in the sales contracts were the payment terms and like a couple of other points like termination date, that it didn't have the auto prolongation course, but I had to read the whole document to make sure that it's compliant. Now AI can do it for me in like 5 seconds and highlight whatever is not compliant. And then I can handle that, right? That's a lot of save time. And if something needs to be changed, again, AI can draft a new version for me very quickly. I don't even remember how much time it used to take to like make all the changes in the document, like in a 50-page document, for example, right? You have to read through every page. You do like I don't know, the search, looking for the words that you don't want to appear there. So it was a task. Now it's like something you just do and you move on.
And let's be honest, there's stuff there that was not getting done before. You know, maybe every contract wasn't properly reviewed, or, you know, there weren't actually three quotes received because it was just too much effort. Like, it was just overwhelming and with deadlines. Now you can do all that, but because it's so much easier, right? Like, it's so much faster, which kind of brings me to my question about the spare time I hear people that's being created by AI, because I don't know about you, but I've never been so busy since AI is here now. Like, it's not like I'm doing my job by 12 o'clock and going home. It's the complete opposite. I feel like now the expectation on me is so much higher. Like, and I see that from my clients as well. Mm-hmm. Like, whereas I had a call this week, we have an OCR product, and, you know, we have an OCR where you can scan in an invoice and it sucks into the software. Very justifiably, my client was like, well, this is kind of very 90s tech here, 20s tech. You know, now I know with AI, we should be able to talk to it and I should be able to do all these things. And the expectation has gone so much higher. And even on the software side, if people ask, hey, your software should work this way, it used to be, well, you know, that would take a team of engineers to do it. Now kind of everyone knows it's not as expensive as it was. So the expectations are gone up higher. Have people been expecting more of you because they know you're the AI guru? Are they like, okay, well, this lady must be able to do 10 times what someone else can?
That's a really great question. And I see several things here. So one, in finance, it's probably not as much as in, let's say, software development. So in software development, everybody already knows that you should be using AI. You shouldn't be doing the coding yourself to some extent, right? In finance, finance is very much behind in AI implementation. There is statistics around that. I can share it if you want it, but that's fact so far. There are reasons for that, but we don't want to go deep into that. So do my clients expect me to do the work in 2 hours that would normally take 8 hours? No. Do I do it in 2 hours? Yes. Do I charge them for 8 hours? Yes, I still do that. I know people like approach it differently. Sometimes I would pass the time savings to my client. Sometimes I would just keep it because it's not possible to estimate how much time it's going to take, really. And job is done. They are happy with the result. I get paid. Everybody's happy. I am able to handle more clients now with AI than I used to be able before. And like, I didn't have this business before, so it's hard to compare. But to be able to do the things that I'm doing now, like 5 years ago, I would need at least like a team of two other people full time to like draft the newsletter, to do the sales calls, to do the actual CFO work. So my productivity has increased. What I do with this time, it's, you know, it's up to me. I can basically drop a couple of clients and go and enjoy the beach if I want. Mm-hmm. Like, why not? Mm-hmm. But I think that finance is heading in the direction when these expectations will increase. For example, that's one of my favorite examples. When I started as a CFO, we had 2 budgeting cycles in the year. So you did a full year budget and then you did the adjustment in the middle of the year. Nobody does it anymore. Like, if you are not adjusting quarterly, you are a lousy CFO. Many companies do full scale monthly adjustments because the world is so quick, things are changing so quickly. You really need to keep up. If you have a budget that was developed 6 months ago and it still works for you, I don't know, that's a super conservative industry, or you are a magician. So that's what's happening. So the expectation from finance people is to handle more data, right? Because we have more data, you have to handle more data, to have more frequent forecasting cycles. Yes, this is happening. Now, can you do it without AI? Yes. Will your boss come to you at some point and tell you? Like, probably your team is too big. This is what I heard in my previous, like my last full-time CFO role. My boss was always telling, do more with less. I can kill myself if I hear these words again. And use AI. Do more with less and use AI. How exactly? Nobody knew. And this is what pushed me to actually looking at AI when I got laid off. I thought maybe there was something I didn't know. And going forward, I think that the standards will change in the way that you will not be able to handle your job without using AI. Like the expectation would be that you are using it. And if you would be coming and saying, okay, I'm like fully occupied and don't have any capacity, they will say like, why? It shouldn't take that much time. So it will come, maybe not immediately, maybe like we have another year in finance. I don't know.
Well, if we can make the case for why should people adopt it today, or at least look into it today? I mean, there's going to be naturally a period of time where there's an opportunity for real adding business value. You can still, you know, deliver 8 hours of value in 2 hours of work, allow you to take on more clients. And obviously that's fantastic for your business. That's going to change over time as everyone starts doing that and the invisible hand of the market starts to interfere. Eventually, you know, there's going to be whatever, 2-3 years of this opportunity time, if you like. And if you wait, that opportunity may pass you by. You'll just be forced to use it when it's not such an advantage for adding to margin, let's say. You know, you're just going to be like everyone else. So if you can adopt it today, it means maybe you can grow your business dramatically. But this opportunity won't be around forever. It's going to be, eventually the market's going to sort it out. Everyone's going to compete down to the same 2-hour hourly window where, you know, it can be done. And that's going to be it. So I can see that makes sense. I guess that's a reason to take action today and start using it. So I want to ask a bit about your training and the types of training you offer. What are your clients looking for when they bring you in to offer AI training? What's the top request they have?
Well, the most frequent request is we want to start with AI and we don't know how. The most frequent thing that I hear. Now, I'm doing that for a year now, approximately. And it was much easier to like give a company a short summary in an hour. Now it's very challenging to say like what AI can do within an hour. Like it's so many things. And when I'm doing this training to a company, I'm trying to adjust it to this exact company needs. And then there is a lot of research that I do before and I discover really great use cases that, let's say, their competitors have implemented, right? So this is like the first thing that I hear. Second thing, so the AI implementation as a process has become much more complex than, again, it used to be. So a year ago, you could put together a policy, like 3 bullet points, right? Don't use it on sensitive data. Be careful with the outputs. I don't know, like check whatever you get from there, right? Something like that. Now, the regulation in AI is something that you need to think about. If you are a European company, it's one thing. If you are a US company, there is no federal, but still the state-specific regulation. So you need to go very deep into what exactly you need to comply with when you use AI in your work. Right, so implementation process became more complex. And I also teach companies how to approach the implementation in the way that, you know, helps them start quickly, but also don't put them in danger of, I don't know, getting some results that, you know, will impact whatever. Like if you send a wrong report to the investor, it has impact on your relationship with the investor. So I teach them how to responsibly use AI, how to minimize the risks associated with this use, how to also handle team readiness, process readiness, data readiness aspects, of which I would say the team readiness is the most important. So, you know, sometimes it's going to sometimes it is a deep training, sometimes it's very high level and very short. And then the company, you know, takes some time to think, and they sometimes come back and we do a more deep, you know, deep dive into their processes, and then I help them with the implementation.
Okay. So you mentioned a few things I'd like to ask you about. You mentioned, you know, I guess confidentiality of data. I mean, so what data, I mean, is it okay? Are there particular models that you would use over another one? Would you have a, you know, would you, are there some models more secure or less? Do people need to host their own infrastructure? What's your advice around what they do?
So let's start with the basics. Don't use free access to, I don't know, like ChatGPT, Claude, whatever. Don't use free versions of this software for your business like use cases. Do not ever do that. Whatever business case is that, it's not a huge cost to buy a corporate access to an LLM. Now, I use two most extensively. I use ChatGPT and I use Claude because I'm not in a corporate environment. In corporations, people have a lot of Copilot, Microsoft Copilot, right? All three of them have a little bit different approach to data security. In ChatGPT, even if you are on a paid plan, you need to switch off the data sharing. Like, you have to do it proactively. It is on default. You have to go to the settings and switch it off, right? And this is what I do, and this is what I teach as a first step to my clients. But then after that, what I see is that companies have very different approaches to what can be used with AI, what cannot be. Sometimes they would go as far as having a like model that is hosted on their premises, right? Sometimes they are okay with an enterprise version of ChatGPT. It really depends on a lot of factors, including location, right? The industry where you are, if you are in, I don't know, healthcare, medicine, whatever, like if you're dealing with patient data, you have to be more careful about that, et cetera, et cetera. And so far, I cannot say that there is a standard that you have to comply with.
Okay.
There is some movement in that direction, but it's also the company leadership team getting together and saying, okay, do we want to be more risk averse? Do we want to be more conservative? Or are we okay with, you know, allowing AI do something for us, even if it has some risks?
Well, it's tricky. I guess potentially if I put in corporate information after the next training run, someone asks about Procurement Express and say, tell me what you know about Procurement Express. And it says, well, in 2023, this was their balance sheet and this was their income statement. It could give it all away, right? It could, you know, you just can't control. You've given up control at that stage if you put it in.
It's not exactly how it works, right? But potentially, yes, it could. It could give this information. Like, if you train the model based on your information, it doesn't mean that it like remembers this exact balance sheet. The way they work is that they give the most higher probability answer to your question, right? If it was one like case of sharing some information, there is very low like probability information, so it's going to be stored somewhere very like far in the database, but it can happen, right? And this is why I don't recommend using free. And like, other than that, if you read the customer agreement, it will say that it doesn't use your data to train the model if you do it right. You can trust it, you can not trust it.
Let me ask about hallucinations, because, you know, 2 + 2 = 4 and your accounting system will always give you that answer. Not necessarily so. I think we've all come across stages where, you know, like it's almost worse. It's almost insidious. It looks correct. It's certainly often extremely confident. And then as soon as you call it out, it immediately says, oh, you're totally right. You know, like it totally turns on a dime with no sense of shame or embarrassment about it at all. So How do you guard against hallucinations in your work? What's your recommendation to people?
So first of all, there are things, especially in finance, where you use rule-based processes, not AI processes. If you need to calculate taxes, don't use AI for that. You need a formula, you need an Excel spreadsheet, you need an like accounting system for that, right? The difference between AI and rule-based system is that in the rule-based system, you have the same answer to the same question every time you ask the same question. In AI, you can have two different answers to the same question. Even it is a math-based question, right? So I can upload the financials and I can ask, what was my margin? And you will get three different answers to what is your margin, right? Because it can be like gross margin, it can be net margin, it can be this period, it can be that period. And it will not ask you what exactly you mean. It will say, oh, your margin is 5%.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Like, just you need to define the use cases that are good for AI and that are not good for AI. And if you are designing an automation, please keep the processes that need exact calculations out of AI. AI is not designed to do the calculations. Now, if you have been working, like you are managing people, right? And you have been doing that for a long time. So when you hire someone new and someone fresh, you know how to double check what they gave you, right? I've done that all my life. So I have a business analyst, I have a controller, I have an accountant. They bring something to me. I have to sign it off. Do I recalculate everything they have? No, but I have my ways to check if things are right. Auditors know how to do that. They do a, like simple balance sheet matches, right? Liabilities plus equity matches assets. Yes. You do some like very basic checks. If these checks work, you cross your fingers and hope that everything else is okay. And this is how I approach AI deliverables, right? I don't treat every word it gives me, but I do these checks on everything that I send to my clients. I publish as, you know, a content. I read it all. Mm-hmm. I check it all. I don't trust it 100%. It still saves a lot of time to me. Now, there are also ways to reduce these hallucinations. You can prompt it to like double check what it gives you, because the way it works, it generates stuff and it doesn't see the full picture until it's generated. So if you prompt it to go back and read it and then refine it, you will get a better result, right? You can also put something, I also always put in my prompts things like, if you don't know the answer, ask me, don't invent things. You can also do things like quote the sources where you took this information. So it's easy to go and check that this is the right interpretation, let's say, of the source. So there are ways to improve that. But I always teach my clients, especially in, you know, in finance functions, we deal with critical processes. You don't want to, you know, add a zero occasionally to a, I don't know, payment amount, right? So you still put the controls in the right places, just the way we had it in the pre-AI era, right? We always had this four eyes principle on everything. No payment go out until two people look at that. Keep that as it is. Like you can say, okay, AI is one person, I am the second person, but nothing goes out until I look at that and I sign it off. And when I look at that, it's not like I, you know, close one eye and think, okay, it's all right, let's go. I do check. I do verify the things that need to be verified.
Very good. Yeah. I mean, I've found it one of my favorite things, or one of the things that unlocked for me, is to like reviewing information and then summarizing it and coaching people on that information. So I use it with my sales team all the time. I haven't got time to listen to all the phone calls, but it can just give me a summary. And personally, a little sneaky thing here is the AI is often very much more direct than I would be personally. Like, you know, like the AI will tell you straight, like, you know, this is the quota, we're 20% off, this is an emergency, you need to do this and this. And it's a little bit like good cop, bad cop. Like the AI can be the bad cop. And I'm like, ooh, look, the AI is saying that. Do you think we should be doing that? Oh, yeah. Yeah, we probably should. Yeah. So that's the hack I've been using, you know.
That's one way to do that. All right. That's funny. But I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
So tell me, you know, who's your ideal client for your training business now? Do they have a particular location or is there a particular type of business you can come and help? Tell me a bit more about who you love to work with.
Yeah. So because it's all becoming too complex, I'm trying to narrow the client type. So if we're talking about companies, I really bring most value to professional services businesses, such as, I don't know, outsourced accounting companies, auditors, CPAs, fractional CFO companies, stuff like that, because I understand the processes and I can better guide them in, you know, AI implementation. I also, if we're talking about individuals, it's CFOs and, you know, finance leaders, finance director and up. The company size doesn't really matter. I can match both the corporate kind of people and more SMB style of people, but it's better if they're put in different groups because the way the technology works now, it's different, right? And now we have Google companies and Microsoft companies. And when you're teaching AI, it makes the difference. So it's better to put them into some cohorts, but even if not, the challenges that finance leaders have, they are the same regardless of the industry, regardless of the company size, in like with AI coming to the picture. I'm starting a course for CFOs, like AI for CFOs in mid-September. It's going to be a very condensed, it's like 6 hours, an hour a week, and we have to put a lot of content into it. But my goal is, because I used to be a CFO, I don't want them to spend like 10 hours a week learning something. I really want to bring them the most valuable information in a very condensed manner. And if they want to dig deeper, they always have the sources. They can watch the, I don't know, YouTube, etc., etc. But this space is so noisy. It takes a lot of effort even to find the sources that you trust and to find the information that is worth being looked at.
Well, that's good. I guess that's what you bring is someone with the experience of sitting in that role. So there's lots of my feed is full of marketers who are reinterpreting things, but it's actually hard to find a subject matter expert who comes from that field, which is something you have an advantage in. People can reach out to you at blendtobalance.com or how can they get on your newsletter?
Yeah, so the easiest way to reach out to me is through LinkedIn. I have it on my phone. If you message me, I'll respond. I mostly accept all connection requests.
You can accept it, mine, so I can see it.
Unless it's something really salesy, and of course, you and I, we all have that. So LinkedIn is the place where you can see my content. I'm going to start posting a little bit more frequently. I was doing also the studies in the past 3 months, so I was really busy, but I'm getting back on track with my LinkedIn content. My website is a great way to see what I have, and there are links to the newsletter. And I mean, I'm open to a chat. There is a link on the website where you can just schedule a call with me. Talk to me if you have anything to talk about. I really like talking to people. Not necessarily trying to, you know, sell them something. Sometimes, you know, just a small advice from my side helps them to go in the right direction. That's, you know, networking kind of thing.
Well, thank you very much for coming today. And thank you, dear listener, for getting this deep into the podcast. Anna, I like to reward people who've come all the way, 40 odd minutes deep into the podcast. I don't want them to go away with nothing. So what I've got for them today is a way. Did you know there is a way that you can keep bang up to date with the latest trends in the mistakes that finance teams that are making that can end them in hot water? For example, we had an example of Naomi Campbell recently in the news because she wasn't managing the funds that her charity had been administering properly. People were taking one too many first class flights when they should have been doing something else. And actually, there's dozens of different ways that finance teams can end up in hot water if they're not aware of the latest trends, everything from phishing to internal embezzlement to best practices. And what we do is we report on these events weekly in our newsletter at procurementexpress.com/newsletter. If you sign up, it means that you'll know what's happening and you won't get caught out. So I recommend that you read our newsletter, not feature in it. And that's what I'm recommending you can do today. So dear listener, you can get on the newsletter at procurementexpress.com/newsletter. On top of that, you also get the latest news about the upcoming podcast with great guests just like Anna. And if that wasn't enough, you also get invites to exclusive networking, online networking mastermind events that we run regularly for people who are in grant funding organizations, fractional CFOs, education, finance teams, and a range of other specific mastermind groups for particular industries. So if you're in any of those, I recommend you sign up today. Thank you very much. And thank you, Anna, for coming along. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.